Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 1st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A civil society coalition demands accountability for insecurity in Nigeria.
Our country has been taken over by criminals, pampered terrorists, pampered bandits, pampered political criminals, and Nigerians are being killed like ants.
Somalia launches a $1.6 billion appeal for humanitarian support. Communication ministers from the Economic Community of Central African States are meeting to stop the spread of hate speech. Tensions are rising ahead of Sunday's kickoff of campaigning for Senegal's presidential elections.
This is the first time in Senegal that there is no incumbent in an election, and is also obviously, there is problem with some of the very important national political figures not being able to run.
And the stage is set for the quarterfinals of the Africa Cup of Nations in Ivory Coast. Those stories, plus our Black History Month fact of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A coalition of more than 40 civil society groups has petitioned Nigerian President Bola Tinubu, calling on him to address chronic insecurity that has only gotten worse since he assumed office last May. The petition follows a series of kidnappings in the capital Abuja and southwestern Ekiti State. Timothy Obiesu reports from Abuja.
According to a report this week by the Civil Society Coalition, at least 2,400 people have been killed and close to 1,900 others kidnapped since May last year when President Bola Tinubu assumed office. The coalition said it was deeply concerned about the deteriorating security across Nigeria and called on authorities to take, quote, actionable steps, end quote, to fix the problem. Awal Rafsanjiani, executive director of the Civil Society Legislative Advocacy Center, spoke on behalf of the coalition.
Our country is under siege. Our country has been taken over by criminals, pampered terrorists, pampered bandits, pampered political criminals, and Nigerians are being killed like ants. It's no longer a story that every day you wake up, it is one killing over the other. We cannot continue this way.
The report comes amid a wave of violent attacks in the country, including Abuja. There, armed gangs have carried out brazen kidnap for ransom attacks in recent weeks. Two people from different families were killed as a warning to those who don't pay. In southwestern Ekiti State, armed men kidnapped six school students and three teachers on Monday. On the same day, gunmen attacked local communities in the state and killed two traditional rulers. Nigerian President Tinubu condemned the attacks and ordered security forces to capture perpetrators. But security analyst Chidi Omeje says government failure is the reason for the persistent problem.
The root cause of all this is just bad governance. Bad governance that engenders poverty, that brings about frustration, brings about anger in the people. You see, there's always this correlation between poverty, bad governance, and spike in criminality. There has to be, multidimensional approach to it. And of course, it has to be intelligence-driven.
Last year, Tinubu vowed to fix Nigeria's security problems if elected president. After taking office, Tinubu retired several service chiefs and appointed new ones. Critics say that isn't enough. On Tuesday, members of the National Assembly summoned the service chiefs to discuss the state of security in the country. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Tensions are rising ahead of Sunday's beginning of Senegal's presidential election campaign. The French news agency AFP reports that no clear frontrunner has yet emerged in the February 25 vote, with an unprecedented 20 candidates in the running. To find out whether the West African nation is ready for the election, VOA's Douglas Umpuga reached Rene Lake, a political analyst and director of CenePlus.com, a U.S.-based media group.
I think it is ready in the sense that there is no riots or no instability from at least a physical standpoint, just people expressing themselves sometimes in a vigorous way, but nothing out of the ordinary. But in another end, I have to say the tension is there, is very strong, because it's a very historical election. This is the first time in Senegal that there is no incumbent in an election. So that's a very important one. And is also, obviously, there is problem with some of very important national political figure not being able to run because of some judicial decision. So obviously that creates a political tension, a very tense atmosphere and climate in the country.
As you say, the fears of pre-election violence have not materialized apart from the process that eliminated from the race of prominent opposition figures like Ousmane Sonko and Karim Wade. How do you think that will impact the opposition in the country?
I think that in a way, the problem of Ousmane Sonko is kind of resolved in the sense that the number two of his organization, Bassirou Diomaye Faye, was actually in jail himself, is a candidate. So in a way, and Ousmane Sonko and everybody who follow politics in Senegal know that somewhere Diomaye Faye is basically the clone of Ousmane Sonko. So I think that people are comfortable with that. The member of PASTEF, their political party, even if it's not legally anymore a party, are pretty comfortable with that. So that kind of alleviates the whole issue about Ousmane Sonko. As for Karim Wade, it's a different story. But I'm not sure about what the real grasp he has politically on the country anymore. I don't really know. I know that there is a region we're going to be a key in the election, we call the Bawol, around the religious Mourid community, where historically the PDS, which is the party of Karim Wade and created by his father Abdoulaye Wade, is pretty strong. So we're going to see how, total standpoint, how that will impact the election. But I don't think it will go and create some trouble or anything like that. I don't believe that.
What's your assessment of the current field of candidates, which 20 candidates, including the current Prime Minister, Amadou Ba?
One of the very interesting situations in Senegal, interesting in a positive, but also in some way creating also a tension, is it's extremely difficult to make any prediction. It's very difficult to say what Amadou Ba represented today. It's even difficult to say what Macky Sall himself represents if he was even running for a third mandate. So now that is somebody from his party like Amadou Ba, and obviously, as you know, there is a lot of tension in that political alliance, including in the party of Amadou Ba and Macky Sall. That's why there is a lot of rumors about Macky not even being that thrilled about his own candidate. So it's very difficult to make any prediction.
That was Renee Lake, director of CenePlus.com, a U.S.-based media group. He spoke from Washington, D.C. with VOA's Douglas Umpuga. The United Nations and the Somali government have launched a $1.6 billion appeal to address humanitarian challenges in Somalia. The 2024 Humanitarian Needs Action Plan seeks to provide life-saving support to over 5 million Somalis this year. Mohamed Akman reports from Mogadishu.
UN says climate shocks, conflict, widespread poverty, and disease outbreaks continue to drive humanitarian needs in the Horn of Africa country. The appeal comes as Somalia struggles to deal with long dry spells followed by heavy rains and deadly flash floods. Suganya Kimbro is the Program Development and Quality Assurance Director for World Vision Somalia.
In terms of the overall humanitarian situation in Somalia for 2024, World Vision sees humanitarian needs remaining high in 2024 due to recurrent shocks induced by climate change and underlying factors such as conflict and insecurity. The number of people needing humanitarian assistance in 2024 has decreased to 6.9 million from 8.2 million people in 2023, according to the latest draft of the 2024 Humanitarian Needs and Response Plan.
Kim Gross says funding for UN Somali Humanitarian Fund currently stands at only $56.6 million, leaving a significant gap between resources available and the need. She adds that most of the funding goes to life-saving interventions because Somalia remains fragile. However, Kimbro says humanitarian organizations, including World Vision, are gradually charting long-term sustainable solutions.
Over the last few years, World Vision Somalia has seen a gradual shift in funding, focusing more on longer-term resilience, linked to the humanitarian development peace nexus and away from short-term humanitarian responses. Continued investments in disaster risk management, system strengthening, social cohesion, and livelihood adaptation, and including mechanisms such as crisis modifiers, are all key to foster resilience and build the capacity of communities to cope with recurrent shocks.
Close to 3 million Somalis are living in internally displaced persons camps and largely depend on support from the government and aid agencies. Marian Ahmed is a mother of seven, based in a camp on the outskirts of Mogadishu. She says, "I have been living with seven children in this camp for the last 5 years. We just get a little food and medical support," she says. "But I really want to live here one day and start a new life. Right now," she adds, "I don't have the means." Analysts say whereas the annual call for international support has been critical in starving of humanitarian suffering, it hardly resolves Somalia's food security problems. Mohamed Ali is a food security expert and researcher in Mogadishu. He says the appeal of the Somali government and aid agencies is critical for millions of Somalis who are starving. But he adds, "We are dealing with cyclical problems, and we are yet to find a lasting solution that will enable populations to develop the capacity to respond to shocks and sustainably generate their food." Studies indicate that Somalia contributes only a teeny percentage of the greenhouse gases responsible for global warming, but suffers more than the most countries from adverse climate change conditions. According to the humanitarian agency OCHA, the 2023 appeal was only 43% funded, raising concerns about similar scenario this year. Ahmed Mohamed for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 1st. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Communication ministers from the Economic Community of Central African States, also ECCAS, are meeting in the capital of the Central African Republic, Bangui, to map out ways to stop the spread of hate speech. They say such language has heightened tensions and sparked deadly fighting across the region. UN peacekeeping officials in the troubled ECCAS states are taking part in the meeting, as Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Officials from the Central African States say hate speech has fueled several regional crises, resulting in the displacement of millions of people. The region's communication ministers meeting in Bangui this week say some influential politicians, business moguls, and community leaders are using radio, television, and social media to propagate information that undermines peace and stability. Semples Mathieu Saranji is the Prime Minister of the Central African Republic. He says leaders of the 11-member Economic Community of Central African States, ECAS, highly expect the ongoing Bangui meeting of ministers in charge of communication and the media to propose lasting solutions to xenophobic statements that are propagated on media outlets. Saranji said humanitarian crises are spiraling in ECAS states because of widespread hate speech. A separatist crisis in Western Cameroon, which has killed more than 6,000 people, was fueled in part by social media propaganda by rebel leaders who are based in Europe and the United States, according to Cameroonian officials. Hate on social media also fueled an ongoing conflict between ranchers and fishers in northern Cameroon and Chad. Clashes there have killed more than 100 people and displaced more than 80,000. The 1994 genocide in Rwanda was sparked by hate speech, mostly over radio, by Hutu extremists against Tutsis. Joan Adamson is deputy head of MINUSCA, the UN Stabilization Mission in the Central African Republic. She says the Forum on Hate Speech is an important step toward finding solutions to fighting that sparked a mass movement of people looking for safety. She says by organizing a forum to counter hate speech amplified by the digital age, all the 11 ECCAS member states indicate they are ready to support and defend values that are vital to consolidate peace and security and promote human rights. Adamson spoke on state TV in the CAR. The ministers said they will enact legislation to punish people who use TV, radio and print media to propagate hate speech, but gave no further details. They also have agreed to control harmful content they say runs rampant on social media. The communication ministers say they will submit their recommendations to ECCAS governments with the hope that if hate language and xenophobic statements can be stopped, peace will return to restive areas. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The quarterfinals of the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Ivory Coast are set. As reporter Bagasi Koura of VOA's Bambara language service tells us, the road to the quarterfinals was paved with some major upsets.
The quarterfinal will start on this Friday. The first game will oppose Nigeria, the Super Eagles, against Angola. It will be here in Abidjan at Stade Félix Oufou-Boigny. Both teams play very well. As you know, Nigeria has Africa's best player, Victor Osimhen, and of course everybody will be watching him. And also we have the second game will be at on Friday at 8 p.m. still here in Abidjan at Stade Alassane Ouattara, which will be a matchup between DRC and Guinea Conakry. This will be on Friday at 8 p.m. Both teams are very technical. DRC, which is one of the teams that sent home Egypt 2 days ago, and Guinea is a very strong team as well. And on Saturday, the game everybody will be watching for will be between the host country, Ivory Coast, the Elephant, which are back from the dead, and they will be playing against Mali, two neighboring countries here. And that game will be in Bouaké, in the center of the country, and also at the capital of Ivory Coast, in Yamoussoukro. Cape Verde will be facing South Africa. South Africa, we sent a Moroccan team on Wednesday, sent them home.
So you said that the host country, Ivory Coast, is back from the dead. We know also the champion, Senegal, are also out of the tournament. Tell us a little bit more about how Senegal was kicked out and how the host country, Ivory Coast, is back from the dead.
Yes, from day one, this tournament is looking like very unique from everything we have seen in past tournaments. Almost all the favorite teams have been sent home. You talked about Senegal. Senegal won all its three games during the group stage, and everybody was confident, saying that it looked like Senegal might be keeping its trophy. But they did face an Ivory Coast team, the Elephant, which were coming off a 4-0 loss to Equatorial Guinea. And everybody in the country was really upset against the national team. People stopped watching games, stopped cheering for the national team. And there have been some sort of changes. There has been a new coach. The deputy coach has been promoted to be interim coach and took in charge of the team. And also the head coach has been sacked by the Football Federation here. And then during the game, Senegal will play well for maybe 15, 20 minutes. And after that, I mean, they scored first. And then after that, Ivory Coast team took the ball and never looked back again until the end. They did score less than 10 minutes before the end of the game, which sent them to extra time and also penalty kick where Senegal lost.
That was reporter Bagasi Koura of VOA's Bambara Language Service speaking with us from Abidjan, Ivory Coast. Ah! And today is February 1st and the beginning of Black History or African American History Month celebration here in the United States. Each morning during the month of February, Daybreak Africa will profile African Americans and events. Now, here are our African American and African history facts for today, February 1st. On this day in 1926, historian Carter G. Woodson started Negro History Week to focus attention on the contribution that African Americans and black people everywhere have made to the development of the United States and the world. Later in 1976, Negro History Week was expanded to cover the entire month of February to give more time in celebration of black history. Also on this day in 1960, four black college students started the sit-in movement at a segregated five and a dime store in Greensboro, North Carolina, to protest the denial of service. The actions, viewed by many historians as one of the biggest events of the early civil rights movement. On this day in 1906, African-American poet, novelist, and playwright Langston Hughes was born in Joplin, Missouri. In his many writings, Hughes documented some of the excitement and disappointment of black people during the Harlem Renaissance movement. And on this day in 1978, the first 13-cent U.S. Black Heritage Series stamp was issued in honor of Harriet Tubman. Harriet Tubman was a runaway slave who became a legend because of her role in the Underground Railroad, the system by which slaves in the southern part of the United States were led to freedom in the north. Those are your Black History Month facts for today, February 1st. And that's it for this Thursday, February 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that saying that you will have a great day and please be safe, whatever you do.
For ladies in urban areas, social media is no doubt the place where their outfits and hairstyle choices will most likely be displayed at the end of the events they attend. On this week's episode of Our Voices, we speak to fashion experts on how the best looks are coordinated and even on a budget. We also ask women what inspired their fashion senses and trends on any given occasion. Join the conversation on